Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 122. Holy cats. All right, New York. We have added a second show because our first show apparently sold out of the Nerdist Podcast Live. That was a 10:30 show, October 14th at the Gramercy Theater. We've added a 7:30 p.m. show. Tickets are at Nerdist.com. Also, we will be on October 22nd at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. So get tickets to that, too, if you are Portlandish. I do want to say that there was supposed to be a show at the Iron Horse in Northampton, Massachusetts on September 22nd. We had to move it to November 8th. I can't tell you why just yet. It's a work thing that I will announce in a couple weeks. So stay tuned to your not television sets, I suppose. That was a bad metaphor. All right. Nerdist TV show, September 24th. Please watch it. BBC America. Matt freaking Smith. Craig freaking Ferguson. Mike Furman is the musical guest. We did our podcast and it was a fucking blast. So September 24th, 10 p.m. 9 central on BBC America, right after Doctor Who. And I also want to announce that I was a guest on The Todd Glass Show, which is in the Nerdist Industries network. Todd is one of my favorite comedians. I went and did his podcast, him and Daniel Kinno, and it was a blast. And he is going to put that up September 12th, in just a few days from when this one's going up. So I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being our continued sponsor on the Nerdist podcast. GoToMeeting.com, brought to you by Citrix. It's video conferencing software. Simple and smart controls, really, really intuitive interface. Everyone that you're trying to meet with can get on in seconds. It's available for Mac or PC. So if you swing both ways, that's pretty sweet. Use it for product reviews, demos, sales presentations, training sessions, weekly status meetings. Anything you want, phone and voice over IP conferencing are included for free. So visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code Nerdist. And now this show. This is recorded at the Just for Laughs Montreal Festival about 5 weeks ago. Why didn't you put it up sooner? All right, because I didn't. But it doesn't matter because it's an awesome show and you'll forget about complaining as soon as you start hearing it. We did this live. People drove from lots of different places around Canada for Just for Laughs in Montreal. And Bill Burr was one of our guests. And Reggie Watts was our other guest. This show is amazing. Not only just because I love those guys so much. They're two of my favorite performers. But just watching them kind of nerd out over each other was super, super awesome too. Because I don't know. It's adorable, all right? It's adorable when people you respect do the same stuff that you would do. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 122, live but recorded at the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival with Bill Burr and Reggie Watts.
Watts, Watts, Watts.
Words.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 29th edition of the Just for Laughs Festival presented by Videotron in association with Lotto Quebec. Just for Laughs is proud to present The Nerdist, hosted by Chris Hardwick with Jonah Ray and Matt Mira. We kindly ask that you turn off your mobile devices, and the use of any type of recording device is strictly prohibited. We'll be starting the show in just a few moments.
Hello, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Oh, guys, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yes, Big C. I can't tell you, Jonah Ray and Matt Mira and I are so excited to be here. They're not familiar with our show at this venue. All right, let's start the show. Are you guys ready to start the podcast? Please welcome to the stage my co-hosts Jonah Ray and Matt Mira. Jonah Ray and Matt Myra. Mira Bowie. Mattstronaut.
Mattstronaut.
Mattstronaut. Oh,
I was just talking to Pete Holmes and saying how great
Name
it
drop.
Is that how great it is that a lot of the Canadian folk will pronounce my name correctly.
Mira Bowie.
They say Myra.
Myra Bowie?
Yeah. Well, they don't say Bowie.
They should.
I feel like they shouldn't.
That's really...
Has anyone thought of a nickname for Jonah yet? No.
Exactly. Too perfect a name, Jonah Ray.
It is a pretty great name.
Thanks. I used to be embarrassed by it.
Well, because it's not your real name.
No, it is. It is, though. My middle name is Ray.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, yeah. Jonah Ray. And then...
What's the rest of that?
It's very ethnic and embarrassing.
Jonah Ray asshole?
No.
That wouldn't be embarrassing. It's Rodriguez.
Yep, Rodriguez.
Yeah,
you're Portuguese.
Portuguese version of Rodriguez.
Yep.
Yeah. Good television this is.
Jonah, we're actually not on television at all. This is
what am I doing here then?
I'm so excited that you guys got to come up for the festival.
Yeah, I'm in the festival myself.
Yeah, I know. You. Yeah. Jonah did a set last night at the Comedy Works.
That was fun.
And you said you had an amazing set, and then you said you got to talk to Steven Weber afterwards?
Me and Deanna, my girlfriend, got to talk to Steven Weber of Wings fame for a good 20 minutes. I'm not sure if you guys are aware.
Did you ask him the ins and outs of Sandpiper Air?
No, I did not.
Was Crystal Bernard with him?
No, she wasn't.
Damn it!
Yeah, but he did get to hear us gush about how good his performance was in the TV version of The Shining.
Oh.
Which it was. It was. Go back and watch that. He is fucking flawless in that. He didn't get enough credit. Also, his Twitter, one of the best around.
He is, but can we just...
And also, he's Stephen fucking Weber from Wings.
He's super cool. But yeah. Can we just take a sidestep for a minute and talk about how... I get Stephen King is a great horror writer and he's very prolific. I don't think he understands film and television too much. Like, he didn't like the Kubrick version of The Shining, and that's why they remade the TV
version.
Well,
did you read The Shining? There's like bushes coming to life as monsters and eating people. He probably really liked that a lot.
The Shining swept the first Razzies.
Really? Did it?
Yeah.
The original Shining?
Yes, the original Shining.
What?
Yeah, it wasn't well received.
That's not bad. It's bad. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah. It's got a guy in a bear outfit sucking off a dude in a tuxedo.
It's got a pretty lady that turns into an old lady with shit cut out of her back and she's toothless and
yet those tits were enough for me to beat off to when I was
a kid.
Enough. Yeah.
Very telling.
That was good. Yeah. Thanks.
Wait, did you pause it before she turns into the old lady, or were you like, nah?
No, with the old lady.
I see things through.
I timed it just. I came right when she turned old.
So that means you were jerking off to Jack Nicholson walking through a hotel room.
Yeah,
I'm all right with that.
That doesn't get you going.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't get the twins.
Come play with us, Myra Bowie. Forever and ever.
I jerk off to the blood gushing out of the elevator.
I jerk off to Shelley Duvall's ear splitting shrill.
No, the best part is her like with the bat, just like. She's not gonna hurt anybody with that.
Oh, fun! What else are you gonna do while you're in Montreal?
I got a show tomorrow night, very far away.
I got a flight in 8 hours.
Oh, you're leaving tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You know who was on our flight coming here?
Tony Danza.
No.
But wouldn't that have been awesome if I was right?
Yes.
Okay.
And if I just got to meet him.
The Danz.
The Danz man. Yep. John Landis. Director John Landis was
Holy
on our
shit,
flight.
Really?
Yeah, we saw him in the waiting area. And then when I was coming onto the plane, you know, I was walking by him because, of course, he was in first class. And in my head, I was like, hey, you know, I want to talk to him, but I don't want to because he probably has people coming up and asking about his movies all the time. I'm walking by him, and he's talking to the guy next to him going, probably the most starstruck I've ever been. It was at the Thriller premiere. And Michael and Michael's telling me to come over here, and I can so he can introduce me to, and then I was out of earshot, and I was very. I'll always be wondering.
He was talking about Thriller.
John Landis ran through security yelling that he was late for his flight.
Really?
Yeah, and then was just sitting there an hour before the flight.
That was a long time.
So he pulled a kind of an awesome move.
That was good. I'm John Landis. I'm late for my flight. Yeah.
That'd be a fun show, The Landis Factor. We just try to see if John Landis can get through different security checkpoints by shouting who he is.
You don't want to fuck with John Landis, though, because if he...
Where will his plane Landis?
If he had a helicopter, you got to watch out.
And we will edit that out at 12:16.
You edited out my baby raping joke from last live show.
Sorry. So now you'll just have to pleasure yourself to the memories of it. Yes, I cut out the kid fucking joke from the Doctor Who panel. Sorry. Sorry I didn't open the show within the first 2 minutes about baby fucking.
No, it's all right.
You blame me. I got a text. What about the baby fucking? I was like, it wasn't...
Jesus Christ.
I rarely ever listen back to the shows, but for some reason I had it on, and I was like, wait.
Wait a minute. Fuck you, first of all. What? I rarely listen to the shows. For some reason I had it on. I don't know why.
Do you listen to all the shows? I don't like the sound of my voice. I don't like listening back to the stuff we've done.
Actually, I don't listen to the shows either.
Oh, well, fuck you.
Okay,
you
no, you're
shit.
Right. Fuck me. Back on
Do you
me.
Think that, I, any of the me. Three of us between us have listened to a full episode of the show?
I should, because I feel like there are so many bits that could... I could have a whole new hour of material just based on 110 hours of fucking around.
Or like a t-shirt for someone to have.
Yes.
I would have so much material if all I could do on stage by myself is make fun of Matt Myra.
You can.
Yeah, it's to this crowd. Yeah.
This makes me think we could actually tour the podcast. If people in Montreal, another country, come out to
our country.
Show. Montreal, a city that... hates America and every other Canadian city?
And apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't even try. Like, I came to Montreal last year, and the driver who was from Quebec, from Montreal, every time I said another place, she was like, oh, don't tell anyone from Montreal that. And I was like, I'm from California. Don't tell anyone from Montreal that. They'll get mad. And I go, she goes, where'd you come from? And I was performing in Toronto. Don't tell anyone from Montreal you were just in Toronto.
Jesus.
I'm like, do you guys just want to create a biodome over Montreal? Yeah.
Montreal, we're still way into payphones.
In French, it sounds a lot nicer.
Yeah, it does. You know, there was three guys here that drove 6.5 hours to see us.
I know, and they almost didn't get in because the show was full.
So no, and they're nice guys. I met them and talked to them. They're from Waterloo, which is 6.5 hours away, and they were driving here. They forgot to check to see if the show was sold out. And now that's dumb and also insulting because they just figured, it's not going to, why would it sell out? That was probably a conversation they had.
That is a typical comic to find the negative in three guys driving 6.5 hours. Yeah, but they didn't assume that the show was going to be sold out. What a bunch of fucking jerks.
Yeah, if they liked it so much, they should have assumed so. I'm
hey,
sorry.
Where are the fucking cakes you should have brought? Like, you just find things.
Yeah. No, I bought them beers. I felt bad for them.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Well, thank you for driving all the way from Waterloo, 6.5 hours. That was very kind. Yeah. Oh, they did. There they are. They're in the back there.
You guys should have luck getting laid here. I heard last night that it's 4-1, ladies to guys in Montreal.
Is that true?
That's what our bartender said, and bartenders don't lie.
No, or aren't secret pimps.
Apparently, she said that at 3 o'clock, that bar closes, and then they just do blow off the counter.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Thanks, Montreal.
Montreal's also got a really weird Chinatown, where it's only a portion of Chinatown. You go in, and then it's like a Chinese restaurant, all right. And then it's a Japanese restaurant, a Thai restaurant.
So it's really Asia Town.
So it's like
Asia Town.
It's like Epcot Center's showcase of the world.
Yeah, exactly. But
that's what they designed it after.
But it's like if it were just like, you know, everyone, they would just go, Spain Town. And then it's like, you know, Germany. And
Mexico.
It's like, yeah. It's fucking racist.
Any Spanish-derived country, like Portugal.
Portugal, yeah. I wouldn't say this normally, but Montreal, your Chinatown is very racist.
You wouldn't normally say that?
No, I wouldn't normally say that in any other circumstance. Hanging out anywhere else, I wouldn't say Montreal.
Do you feel like your Chinatown is racist, Montreal? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Right?
Oh, you've touched a bit of a hot button issue, yeah. Jonah.
I've been saying that for damn near 12 years now.
Yeah, exactly.
I also heard you can get blow really cheap here. Is that true?
This, you're getting all of your information about Montreal from one bartender.
She also told us that there's something called the Sunday Picnic Electronique, where you go and do E.
Was that?
Yes, someone is saying yes.
Oh, $5 for a hit of E. That's what I hear.
Yeah, but you can't bring outside E. You've got to buy from the dealers on the island. This place is awesome.
Yeah. I've seen many of movies that turn out real bad like that. No, bro, it's this great place. You go to this island, and they have drugs for you. Let's go, man. Sure, bro. Thanks, bro. Bro's out.
That was the first draft of Jaws.
I guess we better put a shark in there. This is just people buying drugs.
I can't blow up this shark.
I can't do Richard
Dreyfuss. Martin, we have a fish problem.
Yeah. We're going to need a bigger mirror to do blow off of.
On the mirror, I had fogged up because I was trying to steam the shirt to get the wrinkles out. So the mirror was fogged up, and I wrote, "Don't blink" on the mirror.
Oh, excellent. The only crowd where anyone would know what the fuck you're talking about.
I would have done something like a look behind you. Yeah, that's a little scarier.
I guess so.
But if the next person that gets the room is a Doctor Who fan, it's going to be fucking awesome. So that's terrifying.
The odds of that are pretty high.
Yeah.
They don't stay at the Delta?
They might. They might stay at the Delta. Or the message itself might summon the TARDIS.
Woo! Wait, is that some kind of bird summoning the TARDIS?
That's my owl TARDIS.
Yeah,
my TARDIS is an owl. The chameleon,
the
chameleon circuit froze on owl.
Cum TARDIS!
Yes. It's a cum TARDIS.
It's a cum TARDIS? Yeah.
It's a TARDIS.
Right as the lady turns old, the TARDIS appears.
Oh, we gotta go to 1892. Oh,
I'm
fuck.
Being summoned. Oh, the TARDIS is being summoned from my balls. Here comes the doctor!
You call your semen the doctor too?
I'm regenerating.
Yeah. That's like what you say after sex. Just like, oh, just give me a second, Emma. Regenerate into a different person to cuddle with you.
This time, my cock wears a bow tie.
Then, of course, a vagina bigger on the inside joke.
Yes, done. Boom, smack, we're done.
Yeah.
Your balls are companions. This can go on forever.
This can go on forever. Yeah.
The Celine are coming out of your ass.
Selena?
You know, Selena, yeah.
Slovene.
Slovene.
Rest in peace, Selena.
No. Oh. She's up there.
One time I did this funeral for this biker who died.
How did he die? From bikering?
From not wearing a helmet. In New Hampshire, you can not wear a helmet and die. So we had this bringing all the bikers lined up. She was in this biker club, and all the bikers had lined up, and they were putting the casket into the hearse together. And the Northern Star had appeared because it was dusk, and one of them points and goes, "Oh, look, that's D!" And then they all go, "Oh!" And I laughed really hard. I had to walk away. I laughed a lot at funerals. It probably wasn't for me.
I laughed at my grandfather's funeral a lot. There was a girl behind me. I was sitting in the back because I didn't want to be near my family. And I was sitting, and there was some lady whose phone was ringing. And that was one of those things where she didn't realize it was her phone for a bit. So it was like, and then, like, she's like, oh, and then I was laughing with my friend. I was like, oh, that's like so mean to not turn your phone off. And then then she's like, she looks at it, and then she puts it on silent, and then just goes, oh, and then she answers the phone.
Are you serious?
Yeah, answers the phone. She's like, hey, I can't talk. What's that? Oh, really? That's so funny. And then gets up and
serious?
Walks out. Yeah. Yeah.
The way she should have played that off is answered it and been like, oh, guys, it's Grandpa.
Yeah, it's Grandpa. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a message.
Yeah. He's figured out phones.
The money is in the drywall. I want to start the show because we have a couple. But we have a couple of fantastic guests. I want to make sure they get plenty of time. Guys, I want to bring on Sage. This guy, he's been on the podcast before. He has his own podcast, and he is legitimately one of my favorite comedians. Please welcome to the stage, Bill Burr!
Thank you. I brought my own water.
Yes. Oh, there are some here to choose from, too, which they pulled out of a cooler in the back, and all the ice is melted, so it really is just a hand wash basin with beverages in it.
I took a drink out of my, like, the Pepsi. I didn't wipe the top of it, and then I was like, hand water.
Dirty hand water.
Hey, I got to admit something. You changed when you were describing the difference between nerds and hipsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I never saw the difference. No offense, but like, you really streamlined my hatred. Like, I all of a sudden looked like, oh yeah. It's like when someone explains the difference between like Koreans and Vietnamese. You're like, oh yeah.
Pick
I guess
which one you're gonna hate.
I see it now. Now so I see it.
The laser sight went past nerds and just went straight to hipsters.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Jesus Christ, I'm not trying to commit professional suicide up here. These are the motherfuckers I hate right here.
So how many Just for Last festivals have you done now?
Well, I came here in 73.
Oh shit! Wow.
I was doing this Nixon one man show. No,
Rich Little.
I came here in maybe 97 was the first time when I was, and then I think I've done it. This is my fourth one.
Oh wow!
I believe fourth one. Yes.
That's cool because you were here last year as well.
Yes, I was.
And you did. Have you guys seen Bill live before?
Yeah.
You should. The rest of you.
Of them.
The rest of you need to. You did this thing last year. Sometimes, like, this is a young, fun crowd. Some of the shows at the festival...
Did you hear that? Aww.
I know. some of the shows you perform at, it's a little earlier shows, like, median age 55 years old. Okay, so a little bit older of a crowd. And last year, Bill opened his... the top of his set was all, that whole bit about how when people say... There's never any reason to hit a woman. And you go, Come on, sometimes there's a reason. And and you go, I'm not saying you should do it, but sometimes, come on. Yeah. And so you immediately, like the crowd, like you could just hear their Canadian asshole slam shut. And you fucking grabbed them by the scruff, and they loved you by the end of the set. Yes. You actually completely turned it around. It was one of
those. No, that was one of those crowds. Some crowds, you got to gain their respect. Some of them you got to ease into them, and then others you have to tell them. And I just, that was, I did a lot of pointing in that set. No, the bit was basically, we were watching The View, me and my girl, and at some point they were talking about domestic violence for the 9 millionth time this year. You know, just
isn't that what this entire show's about?
I don't know. I just see them with their shoes, and it annoys me.
Their shoes.
And they said, there's no reason to ever hit a woman. There's no reason. And that's where the bit started. I was like, really? I could give you like 17 right off the top of my head. And the bit was, I'm not saying you should do it, but there's plenty of reasons.
Yeah.
I sort of separated it down.
One, she's Ava Braun.
take that, The View. So it was really, but it was a really good lesson in that, you know, that you can fucking lose a crowd for a second, but if you stick to it, you know, like you can really.
I learned that through playing hell rooms. I tried when everyone was talking and they wouldn't listen, you think like, oh, I got to be louder. I got to yell at these people. So then when I kind of learned this style where you just say something completely ridiculous, like, yeah, you should hit a woman. People, what? And then they listen, and then you sort of backtrack, and then you go into what you're doing. And so, like, and then also I just think everybody's really educated to comedy at this point, like with being on YouTube and making your own videos, and people who aren't even comedians are actually learning what plays and what doesn't. So you really have to kind of disguise which way you're going with it. So... I don't know. I guess it also comes in handy with old people.
Yeah. You know? It does, because a lot of some of the Canadian audiences are very polite, and so you'll do the show and you're like, oh, I don't know if that went very well. And afterwards, they were like, you did a really nice job up there.
Yeah.
As she hugs you with her old tits while Myra Bowie jacks off.
I'm listening.
But how have you seen, you know, like in the last 4 years, have you seen, or however, when did you first do the festival?
97? 97, yes.
Have you seen it change in the last 14 years?
Absolutely. It used to be like a testosterone, like club comic. You'd be standing there and you were trying, like, first of all, there was like the industry, you could get a deal here and like insane stuff. Like, but it was really like a club comic kind of thing. And the guy in front of you tried to blow you off the stage, and like, so you couldn't follow. Like, it was really, really fucking competitive. And now, I don't know. It's sort of the anti that.
In 97, was it easier to find a schedule and a map?
No, it's always been like that. Right. It's always been crazy. But like now, like, I feel like a dinosaur at this thing, doing sort of straight club comedy. Like, you know, there's a lot of just different kind of... It's weird. Like, I came up... I started in 92, so at that point, any sort of prop, any sort of musical instrument, it was just all... It was, like, really a snobby era. Mm-hmm. Like, they even were looking down on high-energy guys. That if you use, you know, like a real comic just stood there and could just not even blink his fucking eyes and could kill. And I remember, you know, like 10 years ago, you started, you know, looking at Andy Kaufman and all this stuff going like, dude, if that guy ever tried that stuff today, they would look at him like he was a hack. So I'm actually psyched that a lot of that stuff came back. And so that's what I would say would be the difference in this festival is that like there's like that whole dynamic for the most part was not here, especially from American comics, you know? Maybe a couple of European guys would come over with, like, an accordion. And then we'd all just be like, what the fuck is this bullshit?
You know, that's what is funny about coming to the festival is, you know, you see guys come over who are legitimately the biggest acts in their country.
Right.
And they come here, and not a lot of people know who they are, and so they're... You know, I think there's a misconception that because, especially with America and Canada, because we speak one of the same languages, but right. We don't really, you know, like there are enough cultural differences that we're not actually that similar. So a lot of the stuff doesn't play as well.
Yeah. Other than your riots, that's like that's the most American thing you guys do. Like, you
know. I was surprised at Vancouver. I was like,
I loved it. I loved that they did that. Fucking Michael Moore made it look like a goddamn utopia up here. You can leave your doors unlocked and people hug you. They don't even know you. And then you just see them. We didn't win the shiny thing. And they just burn everything down. Like, yeah, see, they're just as fucking dumb as we are. I love it.
Yeah, it was. I saw a video. There was a YouTube video of like this guy that was trying to keep people from burning his car, and he's like, stop it! And then they beat the shit out of him. And I was like, hey, you and us, we ain't so different.
Rule number one: you never show fear in a riot. You gotta come with that Snake Plissken vibe with the gun strapped to the thigh. Yeah. You know, go please. Show it's in your heart.
Not my truck.
In 2004, I parked my car on Kendall Square because I wanted it to get burned for the insurance. Like, I was like, fucking Red Sox are going to win it this year. I'm going to fucking park my car. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened?
That one girl died, but nothing happened.
Other than Jesus. That. Oh, she could have died on your car and done you a favor.
Oh, that would have been
could have gotten something for that Saturn SL2.
You should have just drew like a Yankee emblem on it.
Yeah.
You should have.
You could have parked it there in December. They still would have
parked it. I don't get the... I mean, I'm not... I don't really understand, like, sports fanaticism at all. I mean,
I can explain it to you.
Please do.
You know how you guys live vicariously through, like, superheroes and that? You have, like, all those discussions. If, you know, if Wonder Woman punched Aquaman... Like,
that wouldn't happen, Bill.
Seriously, right? Wouldn't happen because Aquaman would be underwater.
All right, whatever. Okay. Okay. All right, there we go.
He'd send some fucking dolphins.
I mean, the truth of the matter is Wonder Woman could beat the shit out of Aquaman because he just has aquatic telepathy and she's an Amazon queen, so...
See that?
Yeah. Yeah, see her in the river and see then what happens, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, fine. You're saying he couldn't summon river creatures like a river otter or some kind of carp?
River otter. That's the most adorable thing to attack
anybody.
Yeah,
but their teeth, they'll fucking tear your fucking jugular.
No, but what Bill's trying to say is that we
that was just nerd ESPN zone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we...
That's
we,
the same thing of like when we go to an ESPN zone and sit in a corner booth that looks like a catcher's mitt.
Yes.
And we sit there. Yeah, I think the 85 Bears could beat the 63 Eagles. Dude,
no one had a better changeup than 99 Pedro Martinez. And then, you know. See?
Yeah.
Wrong crowd.
And see, and just because where I'm from, I think that's so much more valid.
Yeah.
Because at least he's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least he's real. At least
here's the thing. Here's what I don't
you
like.
Know, some of these guys with all
try
this.
Try and get Aquaman's autograph. I dare you.
Yeah, I was at Comic-Con. I could have got multiple Aquaman autographs.
Jonah, I think it's Aquaman.
Yeah. Here's the thing about sports, and I like watching sportsy games because it's fun. But here's the thing. It's like when it comes down to a dedication to a certain team, it really boils down to you're rooting for a color scheme. You're really rooting for... I'm a big fan of the blue and whites. Oh,
nah,
I hope
you,
they win.
No, one's you don't ever, get it. You don't get it.
But no one's
no,
ever...
No, I don't, but I
you
do.
You don't get it. It's about...
Did you grow up in a town?
Not being a bitch. It's fucking manning up when the whole fucking world is watching you. You're not holed up in a tree fort reading a comic book. There's pressure. There's pressure involved. And then you win, and you get to bang whores. It's very Viking-esque.
Yeah, but
and it's not like I live that life. I live vicariously through that. Like, I wish I could get in a boxing ring, slip a punch, and knock somebody out, and then bang a starlet. I'd love to live that life.
Starlet. You want to be a boxer in the 20s.
Dude, that's...
Bill Burr out with his starlet.
Hey, we'll take three more gins, Nucky Thompson. But no one.
All that right there wasn't even funny to me. That like excited me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. That would be awesome.
Yeah, da, 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 da.
Look at this starlet stepping into the love ring with Bill Burr.
I have my own restaurant that then fails and then I'm broke afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, there goes old Bill Burr.
So it's Rocky Six for you.
You only need two cents.
You
only need 2 cents a day to eat because it's like the '20s and the currency's different. You've never seen two nerds though. Like no nerds have been like, no, you're wrong. Frank Miller's Batman is the best. Punch. Yeah. Like there's no. We don't fight over our.
Yeah, there's a lot of aggression in sports.
Yes, there is. And there's nothing wrong with that. I know you guys all had bad experiences in gym class. I understand it.
You don't know how bad it was.
You gotta understand that we had those same feelings in science class. At some point, everybody feels like they don't belong.
You only made it to science?
When I was in eighth grade, they put me in gym with the fifth and sixth graders because I was so small. Yeah. So
everyone took a beating.
Yeah.
I took a beating in seventh grade gym class. I had ghost white legs. Kid came up, slapped the back. It was like 30 degrees out, so I was already freezing. He came up, slapped the back of my calves. All that stuff. All that bullying stuff.
I had to.
You just have to learn to... You just get some point. It's like prison. You just have to fucking wig out one day.
There was the day in sixth grade when I got to bring the note that said I had exercise-induced asthma.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't have to run anymore.
Oh.
I picked my high school because they didn't have a gym class.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I ended up playing football for 4 years, but whatever.
You played football?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Of course he did. Look at those
and
Chuck Muncy glasses. You guys get that? Chuck Muncy? Really? For the Saints? Nice. I was like, that's going to fucking bomb.
But you went for it anyway.
It just sounds like a thing. Chuck Muncy sounds like Chuck an old-timey... Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you got one of them Chuck Muncy games.
No one's ever said, Chuck Muncy, the pianist.
Like, I would play sports, but I was still a nerd. Like, the time we had to get the whole baseball team to comb the outfield for my glasses. Like, I lost them. I couldn't see them.
The last day I played baseball, I was really in the Little League growing up. The last day I played was we were having a game, and my dad was the coach of the team. And in a Coke-fueled rage, he said...
Did you say Coke-fueled?
He was doing a lot of blow at the time. And
are you serious?
Yeah.
That's actually
Jonah's dad
really
loves Montreal.
It's also his birthday today.
You know that's not okay.
No, it's not okay at all. It's
really common, by the way. That's really a common situation.
And yeah, he had like, the opposing team. There was a kid on it whose dad was also the coach. And then that guy, the coach's dad, was the umpire of the game. And so, and the kid, I was up at bat. The kid was pitching, the son, the grandson of the umpire. And a ball went over my head. The first ball, like, just went over my head, and it was a strike. I didn't fucking move. It was a strike. And then my dad, I just hear just fucking, like, bullshit! And then comes on stage, throws a bag of shit, like, over the course. He's all, we're all done. We're done here. Let's all go in. And all the team just came off the field. And
just off of one pitch?
All the parents are like, no, you're done. And he's like, well, I'm taking my kid then. And then I had to leave. And that was the last day.
You had to go get daddy some more blow.
Yeah, exactly. But then that was the last day I played baseball.
Daddy needs to score, Jonah. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's very common. Like a lot of the coaches that I had coming up, like, it's they didn't make it as an athlete, so now they feel like they're going to be Vince Lombardi. Or, Earl Weaver. So they're out there, like, and they're just totally, like, you'd get a few of them that would get psycho into it and forget that they were coaching, like, 8 and 9 year olds.
Yeah.
And they would just be like, especially if you sucked, like, they would just be like, I came up in the 70s and 80s when you could tell a kid he sucked. And just be like, I'm not in because you suck. Yeah. Sit on the bench.
Yeah, I saw a coach.
Like, sticky in right field, But
that's where they put bad people? Oh.
Yeah, right
that's
field.
Where I played. I actually got dizzy.
That's why you played in the outfield, dude. Yeah.
I got dizzy and fell down once in the right field, and no one noticed. I was, like, looking at the sky, and then, like, I looked too far back and fell down, and I was like, shit, I got up, looked around, nothing. No one gives a shit about the right fielder.
Oh, the right fielder. I still remember this dude in gym class, this dude, Bill McClellan. He was one of these guys who was like 6'3". And like 240, but I don't know what his deal was. He had this baby Huey look about him. And I stuck him in right field, and someone hit this sky-high fly ball. And I just remember it was sunny out, and he was 6'3". And for some reason, he just didn't stand there. He crouched down to about 4'11", and at the last second, he peeked to see where the ball was, and it smashed him right in the face.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, it was fucking hilarious. It's hilarious. He was going, rolling around. And our gym teacher, who slept the whole time, always had his hands down the front of his pants. I just remember standing up, Jesus, you see that? And he came running out like he gave a shit. That was awesome. I loved all that. All that stuff was funny to me, watching kids get picked on, even though it was me sometimes.
You picking on or getting picked on?
Either or. I came from a really background of, like, Lord of the Flies kind of thing, where if you were the weakest, you got the shit kicked out of you, and then you just sort of passed it on. Like some sort of dysfunctional pay it forward, that if there was somebody else weaker than you, you just kick. Yeah, we used to do all that. We'd tie a kid to a tree and throw fireworks at him. We did that.
Do you think that...
And the fact that he was crying made it like more exciting. Like that's how fucked up
I'm pretty sure that's
I
punishment
was.
In Asia Town.
That's how fucked up. Yeah, that's how fucked up.
Never show weakness.
Yeah, no, it was bizarre. I remember climbing a tree and the kids came by and they just started throwing rocks at us. And we were at the top of the tree. They were hitting us in the ankles, and we're up there like 6, 7 years old, crying, like swinging in the wind. This just has happened to too many people in the crowd. I think that's hilarious.
Did that sort of prepare you for the career where we feel like so many times in this business we emotionally climb a tree and have rocks thrown at us?
Yeah, like the career path I took. Like I steered right into it. I tried to do the hardest rooms because I hated being afraid on stage. So I just would go into those things and just literally, you didn't get physically beat up, but you really just like, there were just times, oh, it was just.
What's the worst? Can you think of a couple that are men?
Oh, God. Well, what style room you want? I would say.
You can actually play some of the Black Clubs sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
Those ones were worse on a level where you felt like it was beyond. If you bombed, it was beyond you bombed. It's like you let down your race. Like, it was just. You felt you confirmed what they already felt, that white people weren't funny. And some brutal.
I don't know if people, I mean, it's not, I don't know if you're not familiar with comedy, you don't understand it. It's not a racist thing to say. There are black comedy rooms, clubs, and it's a very different comedy dynamic. It's a very specific kind of a room.
I used to try to do the Comedy Union a lot when I first started, which is down on Pico in Los Angeles, and it's a black room. And I did it once just because I was like looking for any place to go, and I didn't know that it was a black club. And I went, and it was, but like I did pretty good. And then like the guys were like, "You got to come back. That was fucking funny the way you were talking about being a nerd." And at the time, I didn't talk about being a nerd or anything like that. They were just like convinced that's what I was talking about. They just saw the way I looked, not what I was saying.
No, but that's the way you kill in those rooms. You just like.
You play up to what you look like.
Yeah, you be yourself though. But I noticed there was two types of guys. One guys would go in. And they would either try to act black and fucking like
that
bounce
probably,
to the music.
That probably
when they
went
out
well.
There. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I don't know, they'd have a Fila suit on or whatever Jesus. The fuck they try to get. I'm old, man. That was cool back then.
Yeah, Barry Sobel.
And then they would. And then there was other guys who would just basically play up. They would exaggerate their whiteness. It was kind of really like white, like selling out. Like
yeah.
I remember there's a guy going, "There's a party over here. There's a party over there. I don't know where the party is. Like I'm the dumb white guy. I don't know anything." And I just remember the crowd would totally eat it up, which made me like see the similarities. It's like, yeah, give them exactly what they want, and they're going to fucking laugh. So the challenge was, can I go up there? Because I definitely went up there, and I had jokes about race, and that's what I would do first, because those would always kill. But then after a while, I'd try to be like, can I go up here and do my bit about George Bush, trashing him, and see how that went? And, it was all those little things coming up to try to get better. Which is how you're able to handle 60-year-old people in Montreal. Years later.
You have a bunch of news. Your special "Let It Go," which is on Netflix right
Netflix
now.
Netflix is watch.
Yes, it is. Nerds.
Netflix is watch.
Where is that?
You know, a lot of America
you guys
watches.
Know that stuff?
A lot of people watched entertainment that way.
I don't know. I don't even know what streaming means.
Yeah, you do
I
it the
say
old
it all the time. They
wait,
say,
does Canada
streaming on Netflix?
Wait,
I have no fucking idea.
So,
what
Bill,
that
you're an old timey fella that orders the DVD on his computer and has it sent
no,
to him.
No, I like having the DVD. It's like having the gold behind your money. That's what I like. I don't like this shit where I lose my iPod and my entire record collection. Back in the day, if my stereo broke, I still had the albums. You know what
you
I mean?
You still kept them?
I didn't have to go back and get both.
Yeah.
Hey, you can just back it up on a hard drive.
No, it freaks me out. It's just in the air.
Yeah.
Streaming.
It's intangible. You can't feel it.
Streaming on Netflix is a euphemism for when you pee on a woman's vagina, I think.
Right. Right as she gets really old, right?
Yeah, of course, Matthew. Yes, she's very old.
Yes.
She's getting out of a bathtub. She turns old. But you said the Netflix thing actually...
You're into old chicks? I was just wondering. Some people are into them, you know?
You were sincere enough.
That's kind of the second time you brought that up. I thought maybe you had a thing.
Yeah. Callback, too.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, sometimes there are seeds of truth in comedy, Matthew. I'm just
noodle stories?
Noodle stories.
Noodle stories.
Zenith of moments. but what I love is that... You know, you said that your Netflix release actually helped you tremendously, which is just sort of an interesting paradigm shift in how people are consuming stand-up comedy specials now.
Yeah, because I curse a lot, if you haven't noticed. And the place where I first brought it, they had commercials and stuff like that. So not only did you have the breakup of the commercials, which if you give an hour-long special, 16 minutes is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Plus I did an hour and five. So it was 21 minutes of the special wasn't even shown. And then they're bleeping it as they're going, and then they're cutting to commercial, and it really affected it. So when it was on that way, I got, you know, your special was good, it was good. But then when it was on Netflix, and you could just sit down and see it for what it was, that's when I got, oh, man, I really liked your special. I'm showing it to friends. So, like, I'm thinking on my next one, I might try to go straight to those guys just because I have an inability to write a joke without cursing.
Was that at the Fillmore? Did you do that at the Fillmore?
Yes, I did.
That's a great room.
Yeah, that was a dream that I like. I'm like a nerd when it comes to sports, music, and then also knowing the history of like venues.
Yeah.
Like I get off on that shit where they all seem like old theaters all seem to have the same historical arc where it was the crown jewel of the neighborhood and everyone dressed up to come there and they came from miles around. And then 40 years later, it like just degenerated into like a porn house. And then people are jerking off.
They bring it back.
And then somebody like a Jackie Onassis like touches her magic wand on it and redid it. And then it would become good if they didn't knock it down or raise it, as they always say.
Yeah, the film was great. I saw Chappelle tape a special there once. And it's just a really...
Did you hear about what he did recently?
What?
Chappelle?
What?
He was doing a show and then he saw someone taping it. And then decided to just do like 45 minutes of sighing into the microphone.
What?
Yeah, that's what he did. Do you ever, is that kind of shit ever happen to you?
Yeah. No, people, they don't get that it's new material.
Yeah.
So if you film it and then put it up on YouTube, then I come to town and now it's like old material. And I get it because just the way kids come up, like they just feel like everything is... like music is free, everything's like free, so they're not trying to be malicious. So I try to explain it to them, like, please don't do that because, you know, if it's a kiss of death if you come back to a town and you do the exact same shit again. It's weird. Like music they want to hear over and over again, but if you come back with the same material, they don't laugh. So, you know, it hasn't been too big of a problem.
How much, so once Let It Go gets released, you know, it's released into the world and then you go tour... Do you do completely new material, or do you do
well,
like half
hopefully
and half?
I have a brand new hour before it comes out because there's like a 6 month turnaround.
Yeah,
and that's you just immediately the second it's you're done, you've shot it. I immediately start dropping jokes, and it's whatever joke I was the most sick of, and you know, and when I put together a new hour material, I take all rules of hack are gone. I'll do a Michael Jackson joke. I don't give a shit. It's just anything to be saying something new because it can weave you into something that might be good material. And then also, I try to live a life where I'm trying new stuff. And if you're trying new stuff, you're going to fail. You're going to feel stupid. And you're going to end up having a new bit. And, you know, my girlfriend gives me just tons of material because she's hilarious. People listen to the podcast. Nia? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. And she just, you know, I don't know. She doesn't take shit from me, so we have funny arguments. So, you know, And I fuck up a lot in life, so I'm able to, and evidently I'm long-winded. I'm able to put together a new hour, yeah.
So you, how's the podcast been for you so far? You still?
It's been great. You know what kills, it's so amazing, is you put it on the internet, it's like worldwide. And I remember, I did a gig in Stockholm, Sweden. And I'm going on stage, and I'm like freaking out because the guy in front of me is just speaking Swedish. He's like, "Eisen, Schmeisen, Eisen, Eisen," and the crowd's just like, "Wow!" Crowd's going crazy, and I'm going, "Oh my god, am I gonna bomb?" And the second one out there, I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" And then they just switch over to a new language, which blows my mind. And they were an awesome crowd. And towards the end, I started doing a bit about my dog, which I had mentioned and talked to. I talked to my dog in the podcast, and I was just going like, "Yeah, so I got a dog," and somebody in the back just goes, "Cleo!" Yelled out the name of it from the other side of the world, and it was like awesome and really freaked me out all at the same time.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
The guy who went before you, did he have a chef hat with a bunch of chickens?
Yeah, I know.
Bark, bark, bark.
It's so disappointing when you go out. Like, when I went to the Netherlands, that's what I wanted to see, people in wooden shoes with like windmills. And you show up and they're wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, it was you like see people from America in wooden shoes. Yeah. This is how it is.
This is how they dress.
With shoes and fanny packs.
Put your shoes on.
That's what's so amazing is here, like because people are bilingual here, and they switch from French to perfect English. And so many people with perfect English have been like, literally like this, "I'm sorry, my English isn't that great." They're like, "You sound fine. I know two words of Spanish in my dumb country." We're not bilingual at all.
That's a golem. I got to do it. I got the Rosetta Stone Spanish thing. I just can't stick with it. I try.
I wanted to get that one, too.
I know that.
Yeah, I wanted to get that, too. But then, I don't know, I just feel like, as a white person, is it almost condescending to be like, "¿Cómo estás, Carlos?" Like, is it kind of...
No, I think it's smart.
Is it?
I think we're running out of water, and the more people you can communicate with when the shit goes down...
Yes, agua.
Yeah. Yes.
Say it in as many different languages.
So it's the opposite of Waterworld.
Well, or at least you can act like, you know, if they're plotting to fuck you over, you're going to be knowing what they're saying. I think it helps. Helps on public transportation. It's a whole new group of women you can hit on. It's just, there's no reason not to learn a new language.
I it's just like Bill Burr set a stone where you just scare the shit out of people. You need to fucking learn what water means because it's going away and you're going to have to partner up with these fucking foreigners.
Fuck, see, I will, see.
Yeah, it's all part of the master plan. Bankrupt the dollar, combine us with Canada and Mexico, switch us over to the Amero. You wait.
The Amero.
NAFTA is the country.
Now it's all right. I want to add another guest to the panel because we're you know, I just want to make sure that we have enough time for everyone. So, ladies and gentlemen, very, very honored to have this guy on our show. Please welcome Reggie Watts.
Making his way to the stage, the long walk. Reggie, hugging, shaking hands. How are you, sir?
Watts, Watts, Watts.
A lot of fun to hug Reggie, but none of you do it, though. That'd be weird.
Reggie Watts.
Reggie, don't you speak like 100 languages?
I speak 2 real languages and about 10 fake languages.
He really does. That bit where you go through and where you sort of morph in between like 12 different fake languages is freaking mind-blowing. And you think it's easy, like, "Oh, you're just talking gibberish." But I tried it once, and it was I couldn't pull it off.
How does Reggie do it?
It's all trickery. Well, it's just I love the sound of language. Like, I love like sometimes I'll be in a room, lots of people are talking. I love closing my eyes and just listening to like the cadences and the syllables that people are using and the way that things flow. And
kind of like Superman would go to the upper atmosphere and just listen for crime.
Yeah, that's true. That was so romantic. It was so romantic. You're just like, "Listen, look, he's just comfortably bathed in his ability to float and just listening."
I can't tell if you're making fun of Superman or that actually happened. I'm like, did he do that?
It was in the reboot of the movie.
Oh,
yeah, in the last movie, there's like this scene where he just goes up to the edge of the atmosphere and just like listens to all the things that are happening in humanity.
Yep.
And then he flies back down and helps someone. And then now they're going to reboot it.
And then helps someone in the same city that he's always hanging out in.
Yeah. That's the one thing I always thought about, like, Batman. Like, he's doing all this stuff, But it's like, does he help, like, you know, the Brooklyn of Gotham City? Does he look across the river and go,
Brooklyn?
Ah, fuck him.
Why the fuck? You know, the guy can fly at literally be anywhere in seconds. Like, why not go to, like, you know, I'm sure, like, Muskegon is like, yeah, we'd be fucking great if we had a fucking Superman. Yeah, like, like, not every city has a Superman.
Exactly.
Yeah, he doesn't care about sweatshop labor either.
Does. It's just petty crime.
That's why he renounced his American citizenship and is now a citizen of the world.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, it's a modern reality. They finally had to address it.
Yeah.
People don't like America, probably won't like Superman. Let's change it.
It's like, I'm done with these policies. This is ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm going to wear jeans.
That's weird, huh?
That's what it means. Jeans and a cape.
I'm a casual guy. I'm kind of a jeans and a cape kind of guy.
I like to wear my jape outfit. I just love japing.
many years ago, maybe 6 years. I don't know why I just looked at my watch to measure years.
It's a really big watch.
6 years ago.
It's the only thing that watch doesn't do.
Yeah. No, it's an old calculator watch, but they didn't really... It's a flush surface, so they didn't really count on the fact that you would need to use your fingers.
You're fingernailing it.
Yeah.
I remember getting those way back in the day, and I'm just like...
You're supposed to be able to store numbers in it. Yeah. Nothing would scare a vagina away quicker than like, oh, can I get your number? Bleep, 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 bleep.
Or let me calculate that tip.
Don't worry, I have a calculator. But Reggie... Mike Furman and I, as Hard and Firm, toured with you like 6 years ago.
That's right.
On, I think, maybe the most underpromoted tour in the history of entertainment. We played the whole Pacific Northwest, and we just like go into a bar, and there'd be the staff, and there'd be like four people, and we'd do our whole full shows. But it was really fun.
It was awesome. It was awesome to tour. And when I got sick, you guys took care of me.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that was really nice.
We did take care of you a little bit.
And got me a new Line 6 pedal.
We got you new Line 6 because Line 6 got lost at the airport.
Yeah, yeah.
Reggie was flying back from England, I think, or somewhere, or maybe Amsterdam, and they lost your luggage.
Yeah, Netherlands, yeah.
They lost your luggage, and you basically had to wear the same thing for a week.
Yeah, basically, and that's why I continue to do so. It's very cheap. Just don't smell me at the end of a week. That's all I ask. For 5 days, I smell.
When does your week start, just so I know?
It usually starts on Tuesdays.
All right.
It's actually a Venetian week.
That's right. So we're using the Egyptian calendar now.
We're not using the Egyptian calendar.
The one where you don't have to adjust it. You know, the one.
Are you still studying transdimensionalism?
I still am. Yeah, I'm studying it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I'm actually doing it.
Can anyone really master transdimensionalism?
You could. Yeah, it just depends. You know, it's eye of the observer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is over my head. I don't even...
Reggie and I like to have these weird fake science talks
where
we just use a bunch of fake words.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about those, I think it was Japanese scientists that concluded that time travel is impossible?
They've obviously never seen
it. It's an easy thing to say.
I don't remember that. I remember that recently they created a time cloak.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? Hey, guys, did you hear about the time cloak?
I'm listening.
Where are you going, ladies?
It's like, come back here. It's about time. Well, it's like they did this experiment where they're able to kind of delay something from being in time.
Mm-hmm.
So on like this nano scale, they were able to like, what was it? They compressed, that's what it was. It was a type of compression. So they were taking light, and there was a particular molecule, and they were compressing its ability to continue on its path.
Oh, to keep time from coming too fast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a condom. It's a time condom. Yeah. It's a cloak is a nice
You make
way
of time think about baseball.
Yeah.
It's that numbing gel that I've heard people use to keep from...
Yeah. No, I mean, but it was interesting, and they concluded that you couldn't go beyond a certain amount of time, that you couldn't cloak something. But of course, we're talking about molecules, so you couldn't cloak it. Which was interesting to me that they basically slowed down time. They made something go outside of our time stream and then reappear.
Well, as soon as we can unify the field theory, I think.
I know the gut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be really.
Got to go with my gut on that one.
Your background was music. You were in bands.
Yes.
When did you decide that you were gonna pursue comedy?
You know, I was always a goofball. Like I was always trying to get attention in classrooms and just kind of be this pain in the ass for teachers, you know. But I also tried to win over the teachers, too. But I was always interested in just... I just saw things as so silly all the time. And I saw them as other things, you know. And then my favorite was to just... You know how it is when you're in comedy. Anything you see happening, so the way someone's bending over to pick up something now becomes an idea for a bit or something like that. Or you overhear somebody. You're always actively listening for those things. And since I was a kid, I just loved it. I would laugh my ass off at the Muppet Show and Abbott and Costello we were talking about earlier. And with Bill, and just like all the classics. Carol Burnett used to crack me up. Monty Python, and then I would get inspired by those things and kind of practice that. So I was doing studying music at the same time, but I was also a goofball constantly wherever I was.
When we did that tour, I didn't see you do the same set twice. Like I think all of the songs that you were doing every night were all basically just improvised songs.
Yeah, it's easier that way.
When you do that, do you find that people are coming to your shows and like, oh, how come you didn't do that one thing? And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I feel bad sometimes because I'll go to shows and they'll be like, do that What About Blowjob song or whatever. And or they'll be like, oh, Love Line. They'll, you know, because these videos, basically I improvise a song and people name the song based off of a lyric that they think that I say inside of the song, inside of all the gibberish I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so then that becomes the name of the song. And I don't necessarily know what song it is at all. So people are like, dude, quarterback. And I'm like, I know that might be a name of a song I have. But so, I mean, it is weird when people want to hear a song and I can't redo it because it was improvised. So.
Can you do quarterback?
Yeah. Quarterback, come on, baby, come on back. Come on, quarter, because the hole isn't enough anymore.
That wasn't it. That wasn't it.
That was it?
No,
you guys, really, you guys
that
are
guy
on
will
the
back
net.
Me up. That was not quarterback.
You are YouTubing way too much.
Because when you did, you did do a blowjob song when we were in Seattle. Yeah. There was a piano on stage, and Reggie started playing this really beautiful song. This really pretty intro. He was a good piano player, and then just launched into "What About Blowjobs?"
In the middle of a dark and stormy night.
And like, then the song devolves into you describing in detail, like, yeah. First you take the cock from the pants and you twist it in the... Like, it just got very... And you put it on your tongue and you lick it with your mouth. Like, we're like... A good 2 minutes of beautiful music.
Yeah, well, I just think it's so great to, like, just... clinically like analyze something that's like so not that at all. I mean, that's not what it's like.
I love that as a comedy device of like the clinical thing in the romantic idea.
Right. It's ridiculous. And not only that, but a lot of times like the stuff that I'm singing about or stuff that I'm commenting about are things that I noted that I kind of bother me.
Yeah.
You know, and then those things or a fascination with something. So I like clinically analyzing that thing that either bothers me or the thing I'm fascinated with, but like in a really clinical way, or like describing snow owls. Like I was for a while, I was getting into describing snow owls and the way that their ears are not symmetrical, so they have 3D hearing because their ears are slightly at different heights, and then they can track things three dimensionally even under cover of brush or snow and stuff like that, and then have weird like tattered feathers on the trailing edge of their wings, so they're completely silent because it disrupts the turbulence off the back of the wings.
Uh-huh.
Like so, I would just describe all of that, just information.
So you're saying my Bose sound stick won't work to give them surround sound?
yeah, exactly. They have constant surround.
So would you put like music underneath that, or is that part of just like the gibberish? Not gibberish, but like.
No, I mean, actually, no. That usually I would have music under it. I'd be playing piano and just kind of like a romantic, like a ballad sounding thing, and then just kind of go over it.
They Might Be Giants described that one. They were describing their own music once as, and I'd never thought of it this way, and it totally made sense, as fact based songs.
That's true. I mean, it is. Yeah, I guess maybe, you know, in a way, like, that's They Might Be Giants just blew me away in that way, that they would just be so literal, but they'd describe it in such an odd way.
Yeah.
It was the beautiful, and they were just amazing musicians, so it was it just fried my brain when I would listen to those guys.
I love your harmonies. Like, every time, I mean, I literally could watch you perform all the time, and I get excited about, like, oh my God, when you start layering harmonies live, it just fucking, I literally just punch the air. It's like, God damn it, how does he do that? You know, like, Just because, like, being in a comedy band, like, it's the shit's hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's weirdly enough, it's easier when you're by yourself to do that stuff.
Oh, you know?
Especially when it's looped, because you got a whole rotation to figure out what your next thing is.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and you're just like, well, I'm just gonna start on this note, and then you start on that, and then you hope that works, and then you do the next note. So it's fun.
How long did it take you to be that free? Like, that sounds like something, if you were alone, you could do it, and then when you first get into a crowd, because like, just kind of like if you're doing like just like straight stand up. Going up, there was a period where I would write everything out, and then I would go on stage, and I felt like I was reading a teleprompter. And then it became more, I would see something, just be like, oh, you know, guy walking downstairs, and I would just write that. And how I would write it would just be just to say it to a crowd and figure it out. So as far as, like, it always fascinated me watching you improvise and being like that, like, free. Like, how long did it take you to get like that? Were you always like that because you played in bands first?
Yeah, I mean, we used to improvise all the time, and we would create structures. Basically, we'd say, like, oh, okay, we're going to try to do a whole night where we just do five-minute songs, and they'll have, you know, an A section, a B section, a C section, and I'll try to remember a chorus and always hit the hook again. So I was always thinking structurally. So so I got comfortable musically making up lyrics and melodies with a band playing. You know, we were all doing it together. And then when I started doing... comedy, it was like free association. I didn't have anything. It was really kind of horrible. I think anybody would have seen me in the beginning do 20 minutes of me trying to figure out what it is I'm trying to do, it was horrible. Like, it was just horrible. But over time, it was really about just watching the room, listening to the room. You know, when an idea happens, say the idea, and it's really, I'm going off of the energy of the audience. I mean, just like anybody does, really, whether it's completely structured. Well, I don't know. I think in stand-up, you have your bits, but you can also, like, change it up anytime you want. You know, if someone's digging something, you can go with this other kind of material.
It's getting to that level of comfort, too, where you're out of your head, where your brain's not in the way.
Yes.
And there's basically just, like, an open highway between the shit that's coming out and your mouth. And it's, like, everything's kind of falling into place.
High bandwidth, man. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You gotta have high bandwidth, and you have a buffer memory so that you can actually make changes in real time but you're still spewing information, but you're kind of slightly ahead of it. So you're able to go, like, that's not going to... Oh, this is going to work. No, that's not going to... Well, I don't know. Well, let's try it.
You know, it does feel like... And I've said this before to complete confusion of people that I say it to. But that moment from the original Spider-Man movie where... Okay, shut up, Jonah. Okay, shut up. You'll know this. You probably saw the Spider-Man movie, right?
I hated it.
You did?
That Spider-Man had a beautiful girlfriend in the comic books.
Oh, you didn't like...
I had that raven-haired beauty.
Yeah.
And then
Mary Jane
fucking little teeth. Fucking girl just never bought it. I just
that guy was a
it.
Bitch.
I never bought it.
That's so
Bill Burr is a part of...
Dude, she had hips, titties.
Bill Burr is a part of a growing movement called the Dunst Haters.
No, you dunst.
But it's that moment where Flash Thompson, like, where just time slows down.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're on stage and everything's firing, everything slows down. And as you're talking, you can kind of, you're aware of everything in the room. I guess that they call, I guess
bullet
that's the
time.
Zone. I guess that's the zone.
The zone, yeah, bullet time.
ESPN zone.
What I think is zone. Weird, sometimes you're like, you're on stage, you know, if you're like improvising a bit or you're in this like moment, it's like so, it's going so well that it feels like it's on automatic.
Yeah.
And you're almost noticing it as it's happening, like outside of yourself. You're kind of like, oh, that's pretty cool. Hey, wait a minute, where am I if I'm there? You know, like, but strange feeling, man.
But your act, you can perform all over the world. I'm still nervous. Like, I don't know. I don't think I would go over that well in like England or it'd be like you could perform in Germany or you could perform in any other country because of what you do. Have you been?
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I went on tour with The Far Side, like 2001 or something like that, and it was a European tour, so we were like in, you know, Italy. No one gives a fuck about English.
Oh, I was hoping that they toured Gary Larson's The Far Side comic. They just took around a couple cows and a bell-shaped guy.
Some really, like, hippie women with, like, horn-rimmed glasses.
Yeah. Bunch of dinosaurs with cigarettes.
Yeah. Like, hey, look at all this artwork. But first, let's hear from...
Tour is $1 million a show to tour with all these animals. I'm sorry.
No, that was it.
Okay.
No, that was the tour. No, but when I performed it, you know, I was nervous because a lot of these countries, no one spoke English at all. And so I would learn a few phrases from whatever country I was visiting, just a few random phrases. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, how do you say, take the knife out of the wood block, or, you know, or help me on Friday, or something like that.
Or I left my wallet in El Segundo.
I left my wallet in whatever appropriate city would be the equal to El Segundo to us. But I don't know what that means. Anyways, what I'm saying is that I would just do gibberish. I would like mimic the cadence of the language, and then I would just do dumb body language, and you know, not dumb, but you know what I mean. Just me being silly and being very physical, and then saying words that kind of sound like their language, but once in a while saying an actual phrase, and that's what I would do. And then music. But it's really the idea of language, because you can really display a lot linguistically without speaking a language. You know, if you're it's weird, like you can almost speak in like how something goes out of focus in film.
Yeah.
You kind of do that with language. So it goes out of focus, but people are still hearing things. They're still picking out their own things, or they're like, oh, that's a joke. But it's not really a joke. It's just the sound of a joke.
But that's what's fascinating about it, is that for someone like me, I put a lot of importance on like the exact words that I choose to write them. But what you do says like, you know, words actually aren't as important. It's, you know, it's the way that we it's the way that we present language is really the most important thing in the way we communicate.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, because I think it's because when I was a kid. You know, my mother's French, and my dad's American, and then I was born in Germany, so we moved like Germany, Spain, Italy, and that's it. And my mother was French, so I heard a lot of different languages as a kid. And then growing up in Montana was like this perfect. I was so fascinated with that, and then sound and music. So I would always listen to things and try to mimic things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I was only mimicking the way, because you're mimicking, you can't. That's not learning necessarily. But it is a type of reflective capability, I guess.
But that's how kids learn. That's how kids learn. They just spit back.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, and you just hold on to that. Most people would be like, well, "That's time to grow up now, don't you think?" You know?
So, are you touring? Are you just on? I feel like you're on tour all the time.
I mean, all of us. I mean, you're probably on tour all the time. I mean, I feel like I'm on.
I always find it funny when somebody goes, "You're still on tour." It's like there's a beginning and an ending to it. It's this is how I buy Cheerios. I don't want to go to Kansas City. I have to.
Yeah. It's always funny when people are like, yeah, you on tour? And I'm like, oh, you mean if they're like a continuous string of
that
shows
stops,
that never stop? But I think there is such thing as a tour. Like the Conan tour was a tour. But you know, it's like it has here's the name of the tour and here are the beginning days and the end days. But like no, I mean I've been touring around, but I actually have my own tour coming up in August. I'm doing like a mini U.S. tour, my first headlining tour. So
oh sweet,
we'll see how that goes.
Are you going alone, or is someone going to open for you?
No one's opening for me. I don't have a tour manager. It's just me. So it's essentially the same.
I'll
thing
I'll do
I'm doing.
Both.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous that you haven't headlined yet.
It really
first
is.
Time, first time I saw you was UCB in like 2006, maybe.
Yeah,
and I was just this fucking guy's a genius. I remember that, like, just totally blown away. Even those guys can't take compliments. They're going to make you uncomfortable. I just really had never seen anything like that. I was just this guy. I was spilling water here. No, but seriously.
Hand
no,
water.
No, but seriously. Like, he's one of, I don't watch other comedians on YouTube just because I don't want their jokes in my head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's because you're riffing on stage. You don't want to fuck up and, you know, go into somebody else's lane. But what I love about Reggie, other than I'm a huge music fan, is that he's not going to do any. I can't do this anything that he does, so I can just sit there as a fan and watch.
It really
I probably watch all of your videos, all of them. Man. I just think you're so special, Reggie.
All we're saying is everything you do is perfect. It's people. It's like I put you in the same kind of thing with like Maria Bamford. It's like she like so original. You can't. There's literally nothing else to compare it to.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny because like it's also a thing like where I didn't feel like I was really happy when I was marginally and then fully accepted by the comedy community, because you know, I did comedy in high school a bit and I did some stand up then, but like you know, then I did music for a while. And so when I came back and I was doing my thing and I felt like I was kind of fucking around on stage and I had this effect pedal and I felt like, oh, that's the crutch. I'm leaning on the crutch. But people were cool, you know, like the comedy community. That's why I really love, like, everybody, like, up here and the New York comedy scene. And then it's like, you know, there's a reflective element of people in L.A. and Portland and Austin. And all those cats are so accepting. So I felt really honored to be a part of that because, you know, people work really hard on their material. And it's like, here I am. I always thought, oh, I'm just fucking around on stage. But, you know, it is a product of my experience.
But it's just fun to watch you. And your voice is insane. Like, yeah. Your voice. I told you this the other night. Like, you know, you jump from, like, one note to another crazy note and you fucking stick it like the notes and I'm always jealous of that because I always feel like, just, like in a comedy band I'm always kind of like there's the note like
the fact that you can go from sounding like Shabba Ranks to Mariah Carey is just insane.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah, anywhere on the Shabba Carey scale anywhere in between.
Where do you rely on that?
Do you sit down to write, or do you just kind of like, this is just what comes out?
You know, I try to, but I can't. Whenever I go, sometimes I'll get up and I'll be like, I think I'm going to try to write something. And then I just don't. I think I get off on like me fucking, like just having a conversation with somebody and they're like, you're about to go on. I'm like, oh, okay. So anyways, blah, 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 blah. And they're just like, hey, Reggie was. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And then I go on stage and I'm just like, start.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I like that. I'm always trying to figure out how to start. As long as I can start okay, I think I'll be fine. I'll land on my feet. But, you know, for me, I'm always trying to like, well, I always do, or I've done that hip-hop character before. Let me, you know, my new thing is I'm trying to start sincerely. that's what I think. I work on starts, but I work on them just before I'm about to go on. So sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'll go on kind of physically, or you know, I'll go on and fuck around with this thing. But then sometimes I'll have that in mind, like, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. As soon as I get up to the mic, I'm like, hello, how are you doing? And I'm like, oh, fuck, forgot.
Do you know, do you kind of have an idea when you go up to do a set, like how many songs you're going to do? Or is it just sort of like, yeah, whatever comes out, you just let it kind of flow?
I always say bullshit song, bullshit song, bullshit. I mean, that's my pattern. I just oscillate between talking and doing a
Dude,
song.
Dude, I even like the little stuff that just kills me is the over-adjusting of the mic. Fucking kills me. That thing on your stand-up special where you were playing this really soulful thing on the keyboard and you always see so many musicians just kind of put their head up on the flag, and you just kept leaning back. And it got to that point, it's like, is he going to fucking fall? I was watching that with my girl. We were laughing our asses off. And that's like that Jerry Lewis thing I was telling you, like that pantomime stuff, any of that stuff where you don't speak and you can still make them laugh, like blows me away because I'm like such like a ranter. I have like such a respect for that. Does it come from a place of pain?
It does. Thank you for asking, Burr. You know, we were talking backstage.
No, but you know, the thing is that what I love is
that.
Love,
by the way, was a classic comedian to comedian moment. That's my fault.
Oh shit!
Sure.
Yeah, let me check.
Is that Aquaman?
I think it's Aquaman.
Jonah, your grandfather died again.
Good. He was a piece of shit.
Oh, I
let
ruined
him die
it
twice.
No, but that was such a classic comedian to comedian moment where it was becoming this sincere thing. We're like, oh fuck, we need to jump out the porthole of a joke.
It's like two bros having a sincere moment where they talk about how they like each other. It's like, no, I really care a lot about you. You too, man. Faggot.
No, but you know, it's weird.
It's the same thing. Comedian version is you just go into a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know why? Because I think because we are so. Well, number one, like comedians, you know, like, we suffer from insecurities and we also never want to be the dick. And so when someone says something okay.
It's one of my favorite things to do on stage.
Yeah.
But for realsies, though, like when someone says something to you.
Thank you for saying realsies.
Yeah, for realsies. When someone says like, hey, that was really awesome what you did, that was really funny, if you go, thank you, you're almost kind of like, I know it's great. You know what I mean? So there's that defense mechanism like, oh, I don't know, I'm just trying to do a thing.
Well, and also just keep the energy up, you know, because sometimes if it's just like so sincere, it's like, well, now what are we inside the actor's studio right now? You know, and it's like, oh, it's comedy, it's comedy.
Reggie, I'd like to speak to hip-hop guy, if I may. What is your favorite swear word?
Well, if I
hope you people realize the musical genius.
It's like, it seems so difficult what you do on stage. I believe... It's what?
what are you doing?
So I just creepy. Have to retrieve the spittle dribbling down the corners of my food hole.
Well, I want to. We're sort of coming near the end of the show, so if you have a few minutes, would you close the show with a song for us?
Sure, I'll burr it out.
All right.
All right. Okay. So yeah. Okay. Here we go. This is just gonna be a straight song. That's it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 1, 8, 5, 3, 2, 6, 1, 2, 9, 3, 4. Lollipop. 5, 2. No, that's not it. Okay. Here we go. This one. I know. Did you say no? Okay. Here we go. Okay. 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 You know, the funny thing is, like, whenever I'm beatboxing, because I'm beatboxing all the time or, like, coming up with song ideas, I always come up with the stuff that I want to do on stage. And then when I get on stage, I'm doing the stuff that's, like 80% below that, which sounds really weird, but I'll, like, go, oh, it's a really funky bass line. It's like, oh, listen to that drum fill. And then every time I do it, it's like, So that's what I'm going to do for you now. Here we go. Okay. Okay.
Which one came first, Transformers or Robotech? I would say the Robotech came first. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And when I think about it, I used to build lots of models as a kid. Used to build lots of planes and battleships. Put lots of firecrackers in them and blow them to kingdom come. Cause all that work has to make it dumb. Yeah, yeah, baby, think you understand, yeah. I used to rush home after school with my latchkey kid, stylisted. And I would open up the door, go downstairs and watch a bunch of BBC, yeah. And when I see this BBC marathon of very funny things, and I would see a man with coconuts coming with a big backpack over a hill, and a king by his side galloping on, not a horse, mimicking the action of a horse as a child would, but he's wearing full armor. I think that's pretty funny, and I think a lot of other people did too. Yeah, but baby, you gotta understand that life is a lovely thing. You gotta watch, listen to your passions. Yes, 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 man with the action here. Oh yeah, and if you like sports, that's okay. But I don't understand. I don't understand, no, not a thing.
But I played sports. I played a little football, a little bit ice skating. I don't know if that's a sport, but it's something. I just did things that I thought was sporty like, but I could never get up on the bike. The bike was something that I could never get enough of, yeah. And so I had a 10-speed, 12-speed, whatever the amount of speeds it took to be considered someone who had knowledge of gear ratios, going up speedy hills and coming down to and fro. And I would go and park in garages late at night with my friend, and we would watch Silver Streak and get inspired, yeah, yeah. And I know what you're saying, Richard Pryor, yeah. How does that inspire you to ride a bike? Well, just try watching it and then riding a bike, and then let me then tell me later. Anyways, listen, I'm really proud to be on this show, cause lots of beautiful minds I've seen over time in California and sometimes in New York, yeah. Bill Burr, someone I respect intimately, because every time he gets on stage I feel as though he's truly a good person, and I really like where he's coming from, yeah, yeah. Whoa, 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 yeah, I'm now on fire.
Reggie Watts! At Reggie Watts on Twitter, Bill Burr at Bill Burr on Twitter, I'm Chris Hardwick, Jonah Ray, Matt Mira, as they said earlier. Thank you so much for coming out, Montreal. I wish I knew how to say enjoy your burrito in French. Enjoy your burrito in... Wait. I'm sorry. Enjoy your poutine, everybody. Thank you for coming out.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by GoToMeeting, the award-winning web conferencing service. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.